Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. Tonight's broadcast is a special one. It's a conversation born from tragedy, but shared with the hope of saving lives. So as many of you are aware, this past summer has seen a troubling spike in boat-related incidents across Georgia. Over the 4th of July weekend alone, the Georgia Department of Natural Resources reported 6 fatalities, 23 injuries, and 21 separate boating incidents across state waterways. By mid-May, the state had already recorded 5 boating fatalities and 27 drownings. And we're on pace for what could become a record year, unfortunately. In the midst of this difficult backdrop, we recognize the devastating July 4th accident that occurred on Lake Oconee, a tragedy that claimed the life of a young child. Now, out of respect to the family, we're not going to revisit the details of that incident. Instead, tonight, we focus on the lessons learned, the reminders, the safety practices, and the preventative measures that can help families be better prepared. Sadly, incidents like this will likely continue to occur, but our hope tonight is that what's heard on the show in this episode may help save the life of another emergency as it unfolds on the water. So I want to commend the survivors of that tragic day, as well as those who responded, for their courage in coming forward and participating in tonight's episode. You know, it takes an extraordinary strength to turn pain into purpose. And tonight's panel has chosen to do exactly that, to honor a child's memory by equipping others with knowledge and awareness. Joining me for this important discussion are Jason Timothy, who organized this group tonight and brought us together for the show, Derek and Davina Jenkins, who are residents of Lake Oconee and who lived through that incident. Also on the line, Greg Ryan, a local business owner and diver who stepped in heroically during the rescue. So to each one of you, I want to thank you for being here tonight. Your voices will definitely make a difference. And Jason, let's begin with you. First, welcome to the show. I wish it were under different circumstances, but I want to thank you personally for approaching me with the idea to do this episode. You could have taken this conversation to any number of other platforms, but you chose this platform and the Artist First Radio Network. So I just want to say thank you for trusting me to facilitate this discussion tonight.
Hey, Dr. Jerry. I hope you don't mind if I call you Andre. It's a little more natural to me. But yeah, absolutely. You know, thank you so much. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely appreciate you and Artists First for basically accommodating us, giving us an outlet to have this conversation, right? And even though you said there were a number of outlets, I really would say that you were the first person that came to mind. I've listened to a lot of the episodes. I really think that, you know, the messages are very good, you know, entertaining and everything like that. To your point, I really wish it was under different circumstances, but nonetheless, this is an important one. It's sort of weighing on us, and it's just one of those things that really just needs to occur. So thank you to you and your team and everybody else in the audience, really, for tuning in and allowing us a chance to talk.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, like I said, it takes courage to step forward after something so painful and to say, you know, how can we turn this into a teaching moment? And that's the heart of what we're doing tonight, just to make sure families who may be listening will walk away a little bit more prepared than they were yesterday. So let me just first ask you, Jason, how are you holding up? Like, I know this has had to impact you and your family. How are you holding up?
Yeah, maybe a little better than I would have thought at this point. I do think as a family, myself, and you know, the people around me, we sort of champion resiliency. Oftentimes, you know, I think there are good days and bad days, good moments and bad moments. You never know when it's going to creep up on you, something you see, something you hear. And, you know, it affects each and every one of us, you know. But for the most part, I'd like to think that we will do our best to be resilient and learn and just ensure that we can just not be broken, but be better, you know, even coming out of a tragic situation like this one.
Right. And I know just, you know, we've been friends for a good number of years. I know that you're an avid fisher. You're out in the water a lot. Has this incident kind of discouraged you from getting back out in the water? Was there an interim period where you kind of took a pause, or how are you dealing with getting back out there and doing the hobbies that you love so much?
Yeah, so before I answer that question, it's a good question, and it's very applicable to exactly what I just did. But, you know, just a quick, you know, just really to the Roche family, as we start this out, I really just want to say that, you know, again, very sorry for what, you know, sort of what occurred that day. I hope that anything that you hear on the line today is really helpful, and you understand, if I can just speak to them for a moment, you know, just understand that, that, you know, we feel the pain and we're trying to do something to basically help everyone that might have been touched by the incident, right? Because I think there are probably other people outside of our group that might have heard it and equally as touched. So, you know, just in honor of Tilly, I just really hope that someone really finds some good value in this conversation. I just want to kind of say that up front, if you don't mind.
No, I'm glad you did, and I wasn't even sure whether to bring up the name specifically, but I'm glad that you did, because the entire premise of this show is to honor the loss that occurred that day and finding some type of way to turn a tragedy into something that could help other people. I think that's the best way to honor the family, honor the loss. So I'm so glad you mentioned that before we got into the meat of the discussion. Just to frame everything, and we want to show respect to the family, of course. So again, anything said during this show tonight is to have the outcome of showing honor to the family and to prevent a similar accident from occurring in the future. So thank you again for mentioning that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I tell you, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's maybe a love-hate relationship or a fearful, not fearful relationship with water. You know, I'm not a swimmer. I look very ugly in the water. I've tried, I do a little bit. I don't mind getting in. But you know, my association with it is not a very comfortable association with water. All right. So we kind of say that up front. But probably my number one hobby is fishing. Right. And not just your regular everyday fishing. I mean, I go offshore. I went offshore this past weekend. And so for me, I don't think that we in general can avoid water. Right. I think there are certain activities that we do as people that's absolutely in our control. Right. So we can choose whether to go to the beach and get in the water. Right. That's our choice. But one might not be able to choose, you know, getting on an aircraft and flying over a body of water, right? So I think water is everywhere around. The planet's a bunch of water, everything like that. But when it comes to me and my hesitancy, I'm really looking for a positive association with water at the end of the day. I'd like to be a strong swimmer. It's a goal of mine, especially now. I'd like to continue to do the things that I like to do, go offshore, hunt big fish, catch big fish, bring it home, feed the family. But I'd like to do it in a safer way. So, it has not made me any less apprehensive about being in the water, being around water. It's just this event, the way it unfolded really just made me understand that I shouldn't be sort of complacent around water, but in fact, sort of have some tools and some skills to allow me to be around water and be more comfortable and maybe even survive it if I were to be in the water like we experienced.
And I think it's also important to note at this juncture too, just for those who are not familiar with the story, this incident that occurred had nothing to do with any negligence on you guys' part. Unfortunately, there were some other boats that came a little too dangerously close to the water and caused the boat to capsize and flip over. So just for a background, I don't want anyone listening or, you know, who's not familiar with the story to think that there was some negligence on any of you guys' part. But I appreciate you. I'm glad that you're able to at least get back into your hobbies. We've had conversations, you know, before, you know, we got on the air, and I told you that this really would have sent me back mentally for a while. And so I really admire how you guys are willing to, you know, just frame the conversation in a different way. And although it's very difficult to talk about this type of subject, at least be willing to have the conversation and be uncomfortable for a little bit to help others and to help them to appreciate being safe on the water, having a safety plan and all the things that we'll talk about today. So again, thank you. We're definitely going to circle back around to you, Jason, but I want to quickly move over to Derek and Davina Jenkins, who are also on the line. We'll start with you, Davina, and thank you again for both of you coming on the show and willing to talk about your story and the impact this had on you. How are you and your family holding up since this incident?
I guess I'll go first. Thank you again for having us on. How are we holding up? You know, I think we're progressing along, you know, kind of like Jason said, there are moments where, you know, we take a step back naturally, you know, if you see something or hear something, you know, even listening to you give the little intro was a bit triggering. But we're here. And we're getting through it.
Well, again, thank you. And certainly I didn't mean to, this just was going to be a difficult conversation at either rate. But again, like
you mentioned absolutely.
Before, we're going to do our best to get through it today. But again, thank you. I know that you're a mother and that your kids were also on the boat. Just for parents who are listening and they're planning on going on the water later this month or later in the year, what's something quick that you can give them in terms of considerations before they take their children or child on a boat?
Yes, absolutely. The number one thing is life jackets. Like, number one thing is to have a life jacket. And not like floaties, you know, or little right. inflatable toys. An actual life jacket that is sized properly. That's important as well, because a life jacket that fits me or fits my husband is not necessarily sized for, you know, a 5-year-old. So just making sure that the sizing is correct and that it is a viable life jacket, not just like an inflatable toy. That's my number one thing.
Absolutely. And I'll go over to Derek for a second. Derek, welcome to the show, and thank you again for being here. We had a preliminary call before this show just to talk about some of our talking points. And I remember you opened up about, you know, how difficult it's been to carry some of the emotions from that day, especially the feeling that maybe you could have done more or should have done more. And I think it's important to touch on the psychological impact that comes from surviving something like this, and particularly survivor's remorse or survivor's guilt. That's something that a lot of people wrestle with after a tragedy. Where are you now, Derek, in terms of unpacking those feelings? And has anything helped you begin that process since we last were on the phone?
Well, you know, I think, echo what everybody says, like, you have your moments, ups and downs. So I'll start by saying PTSD is real. I remember when the incident happened, and once everybody made it back home, well, not everybody. I remember being in the bed and next to Davina, and I remember telling her, you know, my heart is racing. I can't fall asleep. And I don't think I got pretty much any sleep that night. And so the experience and the emotions that one goes through, you know, you just got to process it. You have to, I think, talking about it with people, talking about with family as we experienced it. One of the things I learned is everyone had a different experience. It was a collective experience, but everyone involved saw something different, went through something different, and processed, you know, everything differently in the moment. And so coming out of that, all of us are, you know, coping however, you know, we deal with it. So how am I doing now? You know, to Davina's point, you know, it's not necessarily triggering, but the emotions are there. Some days or sometimes I can talk about what happened without a tear falling, and other times I got to stop. And what I've learned to do is just let the emotions be. Like, don't fight them. Don't dismiss them, but allow the emotions to run their course. And then the people around you, you know, especially your loved ones, but even for me, it was hard even informing coworkers of what happened, because I don't, you know, I was trying to hedge against, I don't know if I'm going to have a moment in the workplace or something's going to trigger me at any point. And so I had to be cognizant of letting people I work with know something that I wasn't okay. And there might be, you know, I might have a moment. So if I do, just know that I'm dealing with something.
Understood. And yeah, it's important to note that everyone works through things and processes things and grieves things out differently. There's no right or wrong way to process anything, especially something like this. So I'm glad that you had the presence of mind to, you know, as much as you didn't probably want to reiterate it or relive it, that you at least let, you know, people who are close to you, people who you work with on a daily basis, just, you know, let them know, you know, what happened, what you lived through, what you experienced, so that in the event you have a moment or need to take a break to gather yourself, they know the backstory about what's happening and what you've been dealing with. So I just so appreciate you talking about the emotional side of this, because I think it's just as important for someone who may be listening that's gone through something similar. Just hearing you tonight is helping them to work through whatever they're working through. And I remember when we were on the preliminary call, David was on the line. I think David has since dialed in, but David McCullum, who's a New York City firefighter and a longtime friend of Jason's, who's going to be on to share his professional perspective on things. But he was on the call with us, and I remember him reassuring you that your first responsibility was to your household and make sure that your wife and your children, who were also on the boat, were okay, and that you did exactly what you were supposed to do in that moment as the head of your family. And so I don't want to speak for you, but did that help you to move forward in terms of processing this and framing it in a way that was a little bit more helpful for you?
Yeah, it does. I mean, having support from friends like that, you know, there's no playbook for a crisis situation. Even I'm pretty sure David will speak to being a firefighter, and they train, but every house is different. Every situation is different. And then for someone like myself who isn't trained in crisis like this, there's no playbook for it. And so the actions you take, the steps you take, you question whether they were the right ones. Could you have done something more? That plagued me a lot. You know, I was a lifeguard at a local pool in my teenage years, and so some of the training that I recall just being in the water when you're in a situation where somebody is may not be the strongest swimmer, some of that kicked in, because my daughter, I remember her being a little, she had a life jacket on, but she was very frantic. But that haunted me for a while of, could I have jumped in? Could I have swam? Could I have done this? Should I have done that? But to your point, my first instinct was to my family. When that boat slipped, I had the presence of mind to slow things down while they were happening. Like, it felt like everything was happening in slow motion, remembering the water coming over to find the boat, feeling the boat tip when it started to tip. And I remember saying to myself, you know, to jump out. And I had my family close to me and wanting to push them because I don't want to fall on a boat or want the boat falling on us. And so when that happened, you know, and falling in or jumping into the water, and then watching each one of them pop up, you know, there was a sense of relief in that moment, like, okay, my family is accounted for. And then it was, you know, I got to get them out the water. And so those were the steps. That was the process I went through. It's like, to your point, or to what we talked about earlier, looking back now that, you know, knowing that Tilly was still under the boat, there's always that, I could have done more, should I have done more? But maybe I was risking my life if I would have done something more. It might be two people gone, but yeah, there is no playbook. So the actions you take, and for me, it was to save my family or my family first, and that's the step I took. And knowing that that was the right action and hearing someone like Dave, a firefighter, saying, yes, you did the right thing, it does help. It does help a lot.
Absolutely. I'm glad that what he said, you know, aided you in helping to get beyond this. I don't think you ever get beyond it, but at least to make the way and the path a little bit better for you in terms of moving on from this incident. And I'm glad that you were able to recover your family. Again, a heart goes out to the family who had a loss. Davina, you had to live through this right alongside your husband. From your perspective, how have the two of you had to support each other in terms of navigating the emotions that came with being survivors of an incident like this?
I think for us, we were just very, I think, patient a little bit, you know, with each other in terms of letting each other even, and our kids, to just process things in our own way. You know, our kids are 14 and 15, and so they're, you know, in these kind of early teenage years, and so they process things differently. You know, our daughter was a little bit more emotional than our son, and so, you know, we just had to kind of let them handle it in their own way. And same with Derek and myself. You know, he talked about that first night, and we were both, there was no way anybody was getting any sleep that night, you know. Every time I would close my eyes, I would just see the water. So it's just allowing each other to go through the motions and go through it in our own way. And you right. kind of have to be supportive of that.
Absolutely. And I mentioned this before, but you guys live on the lake. So I know you probably revisit this more than anyone else that was there. Maybe not everyone else that was there, but being on the water where that happened and having that constant reminder in front of you had to be difficult, and continues to be difficult. But again, I just want to thank you both for, you know, coming on, opening up and sharing such a deeply personal perspective. Your voices remind us how important it is to be prepared as much as you can before stepping onto the water. So thank you again for your perspective. I'm sure there'll be some more follow-up questions, so definitely please stay on if you can. But we're going to pause here and take a quick two-minute break. And when we return, we're going to hear from two more voices. David McCollum, who is a New York City firefighter who brings his professional expertise in emergency response, and also Greg Rhine, who is an experienced diver, whose courageous actions during that incident shows what it really means to step up in a moment of crisis. So stay with us. We'll be right back after the break.
Hi, I'm James Baller of Artist First Radio, and I would like to tell you about a fascinating new book from Crime Beat's Ron Chepsik and co-author Mike Rowe. It's titled Robin Hood of the Hood, The Life and Times of Teddy Rowe, Policy Kingpin, and it's published by Strategic Media Books. The book is a historical account of Theodore Teddy Rowe, who courageously fought the Chicago Mafia, more commonly known as the Outfit, for control of the lucrative Policy racket in the Windy City. Policy, often called the Numbers, is a form of illegal gambling or illegal lottery, played mostly in poor and working-class neighborhoods in the United States. In Policy, a bettor attempts to pick three digits to match those that will be randomly drawn the following day. For decades, Policy had been a staple in the black community, but when the white mob flexed its power in the late 1940s, many Policy kings knuckled under the pressure. Not Teddy Rowe. Rowe famously told mob bosses that he'd rather die than give up control of his operation. Robin Hood of the Hood chronicles an exciting chapter of Chicago history. Go to the Kindle store at Amazon and buy it for just $2.99. For information about this book and other titles, please go to strategicmediabooks.com. That's strategicmediabooks.com.
Looking for your next car? Amazon Autos has you covered. With just a few clicks, you can shop a wide selection of new vehicles, compare prices, read reviews, and even arrange pickup or delivery, just like ordering anything else on Amazon. It's the future of car buying. Simple, transparent, and all online. Backed by Amazon's trusted network and partnering with local dealerships, Amazon Autos is redefining how we shop for cars. Visit amazon.com/autos and drive into the future today.
Welcome to another broadcast of Spiritual Concerns, the Deborah Ruffini Show on Artist First Radio Network. We're live from England on Saturdays and Sundays, 3 p.m. New York, 8 p.m. London. All past shows are podcasts, find them at artistfirst.com. I'll be your host, where issues relating to the spiritual matters of concern will be largely examined and discussed. Enjoy the show.
You're back live with Dr. Andre Geary.
Hey, welcome back to Live with Dr. Andre Geary. I want to thank you listeners for sticking with us. And if you're just joining us tonight, we're having a very important conversation on boat and water safety. Earlier, we heard from survivors Derek and Davina Jenkins, who gave us a real honest and emotional and powerful perspective on what it means to live through a tragedy and what families can do to better prepare. We're going to continue this conversation now with two more voices who bring unique perspectives. David McCollum, a New York City firefighter with a professional expertise in emergency response. And on the line, we also have Mr. Greg Ryan. He's an experienced diver whose courageous actions during the incident demonstrate what it means to step forward in a moment of crisis. Now, I'd like to start with Greg, if we could, please. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's glad to be here.
Yes, sir. So, like I said, you bring a very unique perspective to this conversation, not only as a business owner and community member, of course, but also as someone with experience as a diver. That background gives you both familiarity with the water and the presence of mind to respond when most people might hesitate. Your role that day was significant and is why your voice is such an important part of tonight's discussion. So let me ask you, Greg, what gave you the clarity to act when so much chaos was unfolding at the time?
So when it unfolded, someone told me, you know, a boat is sinking, one of the people on my boat. And so I turned around and put a light over there, and all I saw was the boat just, I mean, we're not talking a little boat. So folks, I have a perspective here. We're talking to like, what is it, a 21 or 22 foot pontoon boat. And so this thing flipped straight up in the air and over to the right and just flipped right on over. And it happened literally in about 5 seconds. And so we immediately, you know, I powered down, turned around, told everybody we're going to go back and help. And my first concern was, you know, there were so many boats out there. There's, you know, this was after a fireworks show, and it was dark. It was about 9:40, 9:45, maybe somewhere in that range. And I was wondering, I was like, somebody's going to get run over. You know, I mean, they're in the water. I didn't know where anybody was, but my big concern then was just to keep people from running over the people who fell out of the boat. And I didn't know anybody, you know, that was in the water at the time. And so we came over there. We were flashing lights, honking a horn, you know, and everything. And then I think everybody was just, it's a confusing event when it happens. It just happens fast. The water's bouncing around. There's boats zipping by us. And so, you know, I just decided to get in and throw some life jackets out there with me and make sure everybody had one because I didn't know. And it was about 5 or so minutes later before I realized and was told that there was still a little girl missing at the time. And so we started looking, and a couple people were looking around. I dove under the boat a few times, just swimming under there. But it's I can't explain it how, you know, it's bouncy, it's dark, everything's moving around. It's very, very difficult, you know, for anyone to even start looking for somebody when that happens. And that's really how that happened there. But just to protect the people at that time, it was just to protect the people that I knew had fallen over. I didn't even know how many at that time, you know. And I checked off. I asked everybody if they were okay. And people were like, yes, we're okay. We have life jackets, et cetera. So at least I had extra life jackets on me in case somebody grabbed me. Because, you know, people panic and, you know, you never know what's going to happen. And so I had enough to where I knew somebody couldn't grab me and sink me down into the water. But it's, you know, you can never be complacent on the water. That's all I can say.
Goodness. Thank God that you were there to assist. I can just, I'm trying to picture it in my mind how everything happened so quickly. So the boat itself, did it capsize fairly quickly or did it take some time to flip over? Did you see any of that part happen?
Yes. So I was told by someone on my boat that a boat is sinking. And I looked back and all I saw was the nose of the boat under the water. I put a spotlight back there. And because we were only going 6 or 7 miles an hour in front of them. I was the boat in front of them. And I was like, wow, okay. And then when it flipped in the air, I mean, like a cork popping out of the water, it just flipped straight up lengthwise and rolled over to the right, well, to their right, to my left, and it was upside down. It was literally as fast as I just explained that. That's how fast it happened. And I always, you know, we've been out on the water at night before for fireworks shows and different things, and my biggest worry is somebody running into somebody. Or hitting something, you know, because you just can't see. And to have a boat flip, I've never in my life would ever think that a boat that size on a now, if I was in the ocean, okay, fine. But, you know, with big giant waves, but this is a lake. And for that to happen, it took me by complete surprise. And it made me think for my future about how I handle myself out there on the lake at night going forward. You know, you just... It's hard to explain until it happens to you, you know, until you see it.
Like I said, thank God you were there. I just can't imagine. I'm trying to picture it in my mind. And like you said, with your experience, you've never even seen something like this with a boat. But have you been in a situation before where you've attempted a rescue or been in any type of adjacent similar situation? Or was this your first time making that type of a rescue attempt?
For a boat, my first time. When I was younger, I was a lifeguard, and I worked at a state park, and, you know, people would jump in the water and not know how to swim and try to show off, or they would, somebody would panic and grab somebody, and I'd have to go, you know, do a little quick lifeguard save thing. But, you know, we were always prepared. You know, we had our little float with us, and, you know, we weren't that far from shore. Now, this is what happened out here on Lake Oconee is a completely different thing. We're out in the middle of the lake. I don't know how far from shore. Boats are zooming by us, you know, at 15, 20, 30 miles an hour, making a lot of waves and wakes, and nobody really can see anybody. You know, the big thing happens is, what is somebody going to hit somebody? Is somebody going to run into us? I mean, I was even worried for ourselves, you know. People weren't really, they didn't even know what was going on because this boat's now upside down after this happened, and there's no lights on it because they're all underwater. And unless you're paying attention, you wouldn't have known. And then there's, you know, the people on the boat were in the water, and we're turned around going the other way. The biggest thing we could do at that point was flash lights everywhere and honk horns and hope everybody starts to stop. And then people did, and, you know, and then it came to a halt out there. It's not like in a traffic jam, you know, on the freeway. Somebody stops in the middle of the freeway. It takes a few seconds for people to understand what's going on. So
yeah, I'm glad you painted the picture of how dark it was out there. That leads me to some of the equipment and gear from your experience. Talk about the various lights and things that if you're going to be boating at night, Talk about the must-haves that you need in terms of safety and just standard equipment.
Well, of course, life jackets, even for those who think they know how to swim at night, I think at this point when we go back out on the lake, and we live out here and we go out on the lake all the time, not all the time at night, but everyone will be wearing a life jacket in the future because the ability of a boat to flip over unannounced, unexpected, is going to take everyone by surprise if it happened. And you never know. You could get hit in the head, get knocked out. You can't, you know, try to swim. You just might be floundering or sitting there. If you don't have a life jacket, might not make it. The other thing that I thought about after this event is like a water-activated strobe light attached to everybody's life jacket. That alone probably could have changed the outcome of this whole thing. And it's too late to go, what if, you know, or what could have been. But that is just the unfortunate thing. But I know on my boat, everyone at night from now on will have a water-activated strobe on their body or on their life jacket, you know, and we'll make sure they work before we even go out. It's kind of like having smoke detectors in your house or having, you know, a fire extinguisher in your kitchen or, you know, any other kind of safety devices that, you know, people just kind of look at them and take them for granted. But until you need them, they could save your life.
Absolutely. And I think also you just going over a bit of a safety protocol, you know, hey, if XYZ happens, you do this. You do this. Maybe another person just calls for the authorities. Would you think something like that would be useful? Is that something that you put into practice for yourself or started recently?
Yes. You know, when it happened, my brain started thinking, what do I have to do? There's people in the water. I said, we're going to turn around and go help. I let everybody on my boat know what we were doing. And, you know, then it was kind of a worry myself, is somebody going to run into me? Because we're going the opposite direction of all these boats coming in. And literally, there might have been 50 to 60 boats in the general vicinity that were traveling against the way were going when we turned around. And
wow.
It was a lot of boats. I mean, that whole event probably had 1,000 or more boats out there. It's hard to explain it, but it's a beautiful event. It's a big fireworks show on the lake, and everybody leaves at one time when they leave, and it creates a lot of, you know, water wakes, and there's a lot of danger from people driving around. You can run into somebody. And then you've got some folks that don't really think about what they're doing, and they're going too fast and the wrong wakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that was part of the problem. But regardless of that, you have to be prepared. And the preparedness is, you know, the water strobe, making sure that any safety equipment you have works, carrying extra life jackets more than maybe you just have on for the people on the boat. Because I'm glad we had extras. I took them with me when I jumped in the water to try to help, not knowing if they had them or if anyone, you know, would have grabbed me. Did I need extra buoyancy not to be pulled under the water, that kind of thing.
I didn't even think about that aspect of it is, you know, someone panicking and then pulling you down, trying to, you know, save them own selves. I didn't even think about that part. So you definitely want to make sure you have the proper type of vest on to prevent yourself from sinking.
Right. And then the other thing, you know, I had a strobe light on the boat that was, you know, plug in the power outlet kind of thing. It's very, very bright. But I forgot to bring a flashlight with me. So a battery-operated waterproof flashlight. And I'll never do that again in the future, because that helps, because during the rescue part, trying to find Tilly was, you know, getting under the boat and looking. And you really can't see very far under the water, even with a flashlight. You can't see at all without it at night. And having a flashlight just helps a little bit with, you know, if you're looking for somebody that you can't locate. You know, I don't think everybody has to have a 6 million candle power spotlight like I had, but, you know, I just have that because at night we're coming back to the dock. I want to know where I'm going, but, having a decent flashlight, plenty of life jackets that are, you know, a couple spares and one for everybody, and water activated strobes. I think that probably could have changed the outcome, or could change somebody else's outcome in the future if they were to fall in the water or have an accident similar to this.
Yes, because like you said, pitch black, it's dark, and if you have an incident like that, you definitely don't want another incident to occur and you end up getting hit or run over by a boat. So having some type of lighting on your vest will definitely go a long way in making sure it's not a worse situation than it already is. So thank you for mentioning that. I don't want to assign blame to anyone. That's not the reason for this question. But just from your own perspective, were you surprised at all by the level of response from the first responders that day?
They were there rather quickly, but I think they were a little bit not sure about what to do. That's all I could say. They were there, and it made you feel like, okay, we're all safe, and here's, you know, the police and the sheriff and everybody out there. But then you kind of expect them to take over and, you know, help. But
that's what I would have thought. I'm just surprised. I thought I'm not an avid boater like Jason and maybe some of you that are on the line. So I always thought that waters, particularly when there's events like 4th of July and fireworks, I always thought that there were some type of first responder or some type of enforcement there to patrol the waters. So I was a bit surprised when I kind of heard the recount of things. But I mean, are waters like that usually uncontrolled?
No, they have plenty of presence out there. That's not the thing. It's just the ability to actually render water assistance. I don't mean driving up there with a boat and throwing a float out for somebody, but, you know, if need be, can somebody actually get in the water and do something? Or, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, there really are no what ifs other than if there was some, you know, major blunder, but there wasn't. It was just things unfolded the way they unfolded. And, you know, I would think that if I had to say, hey, DNR or, you know, Putnam County or Greene County Sheriff, you know, what did you need to have on your boat? They need to have some goggles and flashlights and things like that, too, because if somebody were to fall in the water, how in the world would you find them? You know, if they don't have on a strobe or they don't have any way to look for them, well, I mean, we were out there shining lights all over the lake, and it's hard to see anything, really.
So largely what I'm hearing is that when you go out on the water like this, especially at night, you got to have your safety protocol together. You have to have all of your equipment and safety things just to make sure that you're prepared for anything. You can't prepare for every eventuality, but you want to give yourself a chance by having as much equipment and safety protocols and things as you can. But just thank God that you were there. I really appreciate you sharing your perspective on this and, you know, just your willingness to step in that day. Is a very difficult circumstance. But this is all just a powerful reminder of how, you know, courage can make a difference when you got seconds, you know, matter in a situation like this. So, again, Greg, thank you.
Yeah, one thing that listeners would probably need to understand is, I mean, we're not talking about a canoe or a kayak or anything or a little small jumbo boat or anything. Mm-hmm. These were big boats out there. Mm-hmm. You know, 20-plus feet long, and they can flip over. They can throw everybody in the water. And we weren't traveling, you know, 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. We were going 6 or 7 miles an hour when this thing happened. And there were not massive waves. It was just wakes from other boats. And it can happen. And people need to not think that they're invincible and prepare. I mean, because if what I'm telling somebody who hears this saves one life, then I feel good, you know, or saves more than one life. But always keep in mind that something bad could happen and prepare for it.
Absolutely. Well, Greg, thank you so much again. I appreciate your perspective. I want to bring in Mr. David McCollum now. David is a first responder, firefighter, and like I said, a long time friend of Jason's. And he's joining us not as a survivor of the incident, but he's going to be our subject matter expert for tonight. So his professional experience also gives him a unique perspective on emergency response and how to prepare, how to stay calm, and how to act when, like I said, seconds matter in instances like this. So, David, welcome to the show. It's a privilege to have you on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, listen, like I said, you are a first responder, a firefighter. I'm sure you face all types of emergencies. What parallels do you see in terms of fire emergencies versus water emergencies? Can you speak to that for us?
Well, it sounds like it's pretty much the same thing, just a different, a different type of evil, depending on the situation. So like everyone's saying here, you need your equipment, you need, and like everyone else is saying here, you're comfortable when you think somebody else comes, but usually you need to have your own stuff just in case help doesn't come. And so, like he said, smoke detectors, fire extinguishers, things of that nature, that's in my department. His department is, like you said, life jackets and lights and all that other stuff. I don't know. Every little bit counts. So, and being calm in the situation, you're not used to that situation. And even the person who is responding was probably not used to that situation. They could have just got there, or they could have different type of tactics, procedures for it, which is what sounds like happened here, because it doesn't sound like there was enough done, but I wasn't there, but you felt safe, and then you're the one who have to jump in the water and get somebody. I don't know that this is just... So, I know that for most first responders, life hazard is the only hazard. So,
right. And, you know, we've mentioned a couple of times during this program, you know, for everyone to stay calm in an emergency. That's easy to say on a radio show or in casual conversation, but I can just imagine with things happening so quickly. It's a panic. You have children on the boat. It's an extreme situation. It's dark. I think the first thing you're going to be thinking is, okay, everybody stay calm. You know, so how do you stay calm? I mean, I guess calm is relative in terms of just making sure you act, you know, in a way that's not going to make the situation worse. But from your perspective, how can you stay calm when there's a fire or another extreme emergency?
These things happen. They're actually very much regular, unfortunately. So, in this particular situation, from what I'm hearing, from what people are saying, it sounds like everybody did stay calm. It sounds like everybody did their best to just try and figure out how not to make things worse, how they themselves out. And they did for the most part. It's not something that you can, it's not something that you can teach. It comes with repetition. It comes with, you know, some people are just like that. You know, they can calm down or see a situation and try and figure out what they're going to do about it. You know, like he said, first thing he did is thinking, get his family out. First thing he did is thinking, let me jump in and see what I can do. It's up to the person. Collectively, people usually, it's a lot of chaos. But somebody in that group is going to stop and actually see what's going on and try and figure it out.
Right. And you brought up Derek. I'm so glad you were on the call that day, because he was having a rough time that day. I could tell, you know, he was very heavy on him and the guilt in terms of if there's anything more that he could have done to save little Tilly. So I'm definitely glad that you gave him that perspective of, no, you did what you were supposed to do as the head of your household, and you made sure that all of your family members were present, accounted for, and safe. And I think just sharing that perspective from someone who is a first responder, that speaks volumes in terms of helping you to reframe the situation and give you a little bit more peace, maybe not full peace, because again, a life was lost, but at least some peace in moving forward. So thank you for being on the line and helping him with some tools that can get him through that moment emotionally.
No problem, I guess. You know,
so listen,
like you said before, go ahead.
I know a lot of people assume that this type of stuff won't happen to them. Say that you are a bystander. You're someone, you know, who is watching something unfold. You want to help. What can you tell bystanders who want to maybe play an active role to help the situation but may not have the training, may not have the experience? Is there a protocol for civilians who are seeing something to get involved in a way that it's not going to make them get in a situation themselves or maybe worsen the situation? What's your take on that?
You want to try not to become another life hazard.
Yes.
So you want to try not to become another burden on a very, very bad situation. All right. If you don't have the training, if you know that you're going to jump in and just be another person that they have to save, then you need to be maybe looking around for tools, like he said. Maybe do I have a light? Does somebody have a rope? Maybe doing things like that to try and help the situation. But you don't want to be another situation. That's two or three things that somebody else has to do something about.
Right. So that's a good point. Like you said, you don't want to be an additional person that needs rescuing. But I know that there's a lot of, you know, well-meaning people that want to be involved, want to do something, have some type of way that they feel like they contributed towards making the situation better. But just good old-fashioned common sense. You know, if you know you can't swim, don't get out and try to save someone from drowning. But I appreciate this.
Common sense in these situations.
And that's what we have come to know. But, you know, just I want to cover all bases because there are people that are listening that may not have to deal with this directly, but, you know, they may be adjacent to the situation and, you know, don't want to just be a bystander that looks and points. But, you know, sometimes that's all you can do. Or maybe, you know, you can just make sure you call 911 and let, you know, authorities know that there's an incident if you're not able to directly help someone. But, yeah, just good old-fashioned common sense. I ask one more question, and then we'll get to the group. If you could design a simple safety drill for situations like this or families to practice before they go out in the water or not even water because you're a fireman, what type of safety drill can you have in the home to prevent an incident? Should there be a fire? Should there be some type of accident, explosion, what have you?
Yeah, you try and learn things that helps once the situation starts. So one thing I learned that almost nobody knows, I definitely didn't know, is that there's a fire in your house. Most people think open the doors and run out, you know, when you're in the mix of it, jump out the window, stuff like that. What people don't know is something simple as just closing the door. Like all you have, like say all your bedrooms are upstairs and stuff like that, and everybody leaves all their doors open, it just makes a flow path. That's right. Certain things that people don't know. So like in this case, certain things that people don't know. Everybody should have on a life jacket. Everybody needs lights. Everybody do need. These are things that I wouldn't know. I don't do the water. You know, so it's just the simple things is the only thing that you can do. Because once stuff hit the fan, hopefully you have the simple things and you give yourself a little bit more time to think. And maybe you can figure something out. Maybe you can save a life.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, David. I really appreciate you coming to this discussion. Like I said, you brought a different lens with the particular expertise that you have. So I'm glad that you were able to dial in and just give us some sage advice and good practices for emergency situations. I'm going to open this question up to the group, and maybe we can hear from Jason since he went first and it's been a while since we heard from him. And this is for everyone that was involved with the event. I know I asked Derek and Davina this, but, you know, after you all have lived through something traumatic like this, are any of you dealing with any guilt or replaying the what ifs? Is this still a thing for you all now? Or since it's been 2 months, is it getting a little bit easier? Anybody want to speak to that, Jason?
So I actually believe that this is something that will remain with me forever, and I'm okay with that. I'm literally okay with that. What I recognized about myself is that on that particular day, July 4th, 2025, I didn't possess a set of skills that were needed in that situation. That's an opportunity for me to get better and grow. For the people that know me, the people that are on this line, everybody knows that I'm very much a family person, family man. I'm very much a helper. I'm very much a protector. I'm very much all these things that like have to do with like family and people and community. But I did realize there were some skills that I did not possess that day that because the universe is the universe, and sometimes the universe requires things to happen in a certain way, and there's nothing you can do about it. However, I will think about what skills I did not possess that did not allow me to, potentially alter the outcome. I don't know if we could. I don't think anybody here really could have, but I sure wish that I had a different set of skills, right? I hear people like Greg talk. I'd like to become a little more like that, right? If I'm offshore fishing and somebody finds themselves in a situation that's very sticky, hopefully I can help respond. But not only just that, right? So in my day job, I say this is not my day job, right? Having conversations like this is very difficult. It's nerve-wracking. It makes me anxious. And it probably does for just about everybody else on this line, right? But yeah. But I heard a theme of, you know, sort of, you know, it's a chaotic, it's an emergent situation. Things are happening very fast. What's the plan? I did recognize that there's a pitfall there that, you know, when emergency responders show up, one would think that that is the coordination, right? They have shown up, right? That's the cavalry. They're flashing lights. They've told you, I am here. For me, that's going to be a takeaway, right? And I would encourage audience members that are here today, listen to this, that's also a takeaway. That's a bit of a pitfall. Greg pointed out that emergency responders that day did not necessarily respond to a water event. They did not get in the water. That's a takeaway. Could I have helped coordinate, right? In my day job, I feel like I coordinate a bunch of stuff, right? So is there a way to say, you know, hey, we've done this already. Don't do that again, right? The emergency has changed, right? People are now out of water onto boats. There's a secondary emergency. Identify that, communicate that, say that. Who does what, right? In my day job, I do those things. But in that situation, I mean, I didn't possess those skills. I didn't even possess the clarity to understand what was really happening. And I was really sort of happy to see that the professionals had shown up. But it's a pitfall. We didn't get the response that I think we really deserve. The people that were there going through it deserve. So, you know, guilt, yes, I think there would be a level of that. Not having prepared enough. I mean, things will happen. How prepared can you be? What should you have done prior to this? I think I'll always rethink those things. But again, like I said at the beginning of the show, you know, part of the reason we're having this conversation is that there needs to be a positive association with a negative event. We all need to become sort of better at the end of this. And somebody listening to this show now or in the future, because I know these things are archived, now or in the future, should get something from this conversation that will help them. And I think the universe will understand that this group of people, even though we, you know, we suffered a loss, we also try to share a message at the end of that. So yes, we will feel a certain way from now into probably perpetuity until we take our last breath. But we will try. And we will always encourage people to do a little bit better. And that's how I feel about it.
You know, I've never been through anything like what you all have experienced. I pray I never have to. But I'll tell you, just even as the host, it's been difficult to just, you know, make it a regular show and just, you know, do my thing. I've been touched by this story ever since you brought it to me. I can imagine being there, witnessing it, reliving it every day, going through the mental and emotional what ifs and had I done this or if we did that. It has to be debilitating at times. And to then come on a show and relive it, talk about it, with, of course, the intention to help other people navigate a similar situation. So I'm glad that we're having this conversation, but I do appreciate how difficult this may be to relive all of that. So I definitely feel like this conversation has been both helpful and healing for me, for each one of you, and I definitely believe our listeners as well. I mean, I don't know how you can listen to this show and not, if you're going on the water, make sure you have your equipment, make sure it has strobe lights on it, make sure you just do a quick cursory run through, hey, if this happens, you do this, you do that. Assess what you have on the boat. If it's going to be nighttime, make sure you got proper lighting. You know how dark it can get on the water. You know, so just, I think just conversation will save a life. You know, this will be played in perpetuity. People are going to replay this and share it. And so they'll listen to these stories and they'll say, you know what? I listened to this show. We need to make sure we do X, Y, and Z. So you guys have already saved lives. So I think we've done a great job of honoring the family, just the story of this. So like I say, I appreciate all of you guys being here. I want to open the floor up to Derek and Davina, Greg, David. Do any of you have any last words or anything else that you wanted to share with the listeners?
I do, actually.
Go ahead.
So first, I know, you know, the question you asked me, what would be my number one thing to tell people, and I talked about the life jackets. Jason saved all of us that night. Because only one of us out of the 12 people on that boat, well, except for the child, she was also wearing a life jacket the entire time. But my sister was the only other person wearing a life jacket when we took off to go out. But on the way back, when it was dark and all of the boats were around us, Jason said everybody needs to put on a life jacket for the ride back. And we did. And if that had not happened, we would have had a lot more casualties that day. So I really, really want to harp on the life jacket. And it's not just, and the point I'm trying to make, it's we had it, but we didn't have it on. You know, that boat could have flipped in the daytime when we were going out. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have them on. So you can have your life jacket, but you also need to be wearing it. And it needs to be buckled and properly, you know, fitted on you. Even talking about with children, and, you know, we had teenagers out there on the boat that initially did not want to put the life jackets on, but as parents and as adults, we made them. And, you know, it's the same thing. We've taken our friends out on that water all summer, last summer as well. And it's, you know, just making sure that people are wearing their life jackets when they're out on the water, near a dock, just even in a pool, if you don't know how to swim, put on a life jacket, because you just never know. You know, we talk about how quickly that boat flipped over. It was literally within the matter of seconds. And I, going into the water, I was calm, I would say, going into the water, because I knew I had my life jacket on, and mm-hmm. I knew that I would come back up. And I was kind of, you know, reassured in that moment, but had I not been wearing that, you know, I wouldn't be here.
So at the bare minimum. Go ahead, Jason. Go ahead.
Sorry, Andre. So, and I absolutely appreciate that. So, you know, this, so there's one more maybe point here, right? And I appreciate what Davina just said. Mm-hmm. You know, so gut feelings, right? The gut. You know, we talk about trusting our gut a lot of times. Sometimes we suppress it. Sometimes we don't. There were a series of things. What she just described there, I would say, might be the thing that was most that was closest to the event. Right? It was the last major thing that we heard, last major decision that we heard. Put on your jackets. It's dark. It's late at night. There are a bunch of boats out here, and I think that's what sort of, if we want to say, mitigated. Even though everybody might not feel like this was mitigated, but in some ways, it was mitigated. The tragedy could have been worse. You know, early in the day, there were also some decisions, right? Those jackets were not on the boat at the beginning, right? So someone realized, hey, we left jackets. Someone else, Derek, so I think maybe it was Alice, actually Davina herself, said, hey, the jackets aren't here, okay? So what I'm trying to illustrate is that with these things, there are a series of events, right? And anything within that chain could break the series of events. So what we're saying to listeners are, from the very beginning, someone sees, you know, they say, see something, say something, right? It might be applicable here, a different scenario, but it is applicable, right? Hey, we actually don't have that. I know we go out all the time, but this time someone has realized we don't have everything we need right now. Mm-hmm. Someone else has to take that information and they need to walk with it, right? Yes, I heard you. Please don't get angry at your spouse, at your kid, at your, right? Oh my goodness, this is very inconvenient. I need to now go do something, right? So, you know, then we had, I want to say it might have been Derek who went back to the house and picked up the jackets and brought it to the boat, right? So what I'm trying to just illustrate is that, yes, each of these things are important for everybody. You see something, you say something, you have a gut feeling about something. Maybe it was just to not even go out that night, right? Because there are too many boats. There are people that are like that. You may not. So any of those things, each of those things, I guess I should say, are important. You need to first have them. You need to do something with them once you have them. And maybe at the end of that, if the universe doesn't have its way, you'll come home. But, you know, we all subscribe to a higher power, and I do respect that. And so anything that we do, it could work out in our favor. Sometimes it does not. But I think we can still do all of the things that we can do between point A and point B to ensure that, you know, we come home, we bring our families home, and live, tell the story another day.
Very well said. Did anyone else want to piggyback on what Jason said? Greg, Derek, David?
You know, never. I guess the only thing I could say, I've been out on the water a lot, and I know when I have the young children out there and they're 10, 11 years old, do I have to wear the life jacket? Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
Yes.
Even in the day, because I don't want to get a ticket, but I also fear, you know, you could hit something, the foot of the boat could hit it while you're traveling, I don't know, not even fast, 10 miles an hour. The boat jolts. They're standing up. They fall off the front. They get hurt, they get sucked under the boat or whatever, but if they don't have a life jacket, who knows what would happen? It just doesn't, you know, it's not worth it. Life jackets cost $15, $20, a little strobe light's about the same price. Never put a price on that kind of stuff. Just get the equipment, always have it out there. If you've got 12 people on your boat, have 12 life jackets. Have a few extras for those, you know, you might need one for somebody else. You know, just have it.
Thank you, Greg. Derek, I thought I heard you trying to chime in as well.
Yeah, the only thing that I think my takeaway, for me, you asked Jason, like, the question about change. Like, my risk tolerance in life going forward is a little lower. We all talking about the life jackets. You know, I think the reality is I didn't have one on when the boat slipped. And so you mentioned, no, you think you're invincible. You think nothing's going to happen. Yes. And I'm grateful Jason made everyone put a jacket on. I didn't have one on because we were one short. But even if it was there, knowing me, I probably wouldn't have put it on anyway, just because of my mindset and because of the risk tolerance that I had. So coming out of this, I do know my risk tolerance in life is I'm a little bit more cautious. I think, you know, when we were driving and we were in a car and Gina and I talked and she's like, yeah, I noticed you're going a little bit slower right now. And so something, my hope for your listeners, for the listeners, is I hope that you don't have to go through something to adjust or really assess risk and understand how precious life is. and how quickly something can happen in the blink of an eye. Greg talked about the boat flipping over. Davina talked about the water, like that water coming over the front of the boat. That image will never leave my head. The feeling of the boat tipping up, standing up on its nose, essentially, that feeling will never leave me. And so, you know, we have not been back out on the water since the 4th. I'm sure we will be back out. I don't know when, but it's just, it's a risk thing. And again, part of the processing that one goes through, that PTSD that I alluded to earlier. And so my parting words are just, it's okay if that risk tolerance has changed. It is there for a reason. That's your gut telling you something. Listen to it.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for saying that. You're exactly right. Life can change in an instant. For the listeners who are listening to this, please take what these five people are saying to heart. You don't want to have to learn something like this through experience. Take the lessons that these people on the line had to learn in a very difficult way. Take it. Get your safety gear. Put on the life vest, even if it clashes with what you have on. You know, do all the things. Take all the precautions that you can to keep yourself safe and your family safe. And thank you, guys. David, I'll give you the last word if you want to chime in before we wrap up.
No, I have nothing. Just everyone be safe and be cautious like everyone else said. Thank you.
Amen. Amen. So, like I said, tonight's conversation has been powerful. A big thanks to all the participants, Derek, Davina, Greg, David, Jason. Thank you for bringing everybody together for this and for organizing this. I appreciate everyone's courage and honesty and this willingness to turn a tragedy into teaching. To our listeners, thank you so much for spending an hour, more than an hour at this point of your evening with us. We appreciate that. And we hope you walk away with tools, awareness, and just a renewed commitment to being safe on the water or wherever you are. And to Tilly's family, we love you. We're praying for you. We hope tonight's discussion honored your sweet baby girl by helping to protect other families and giving the information that they need to stay safe. Okay. Be sure to join us for our next episode, which is going to discuss the rising unemployment rate of college graduates. That'll be airing October 8th at 6 p.m. Eastern. Until then, everybody stay safe, stay encouraged, and we'll see you next time. Good night, everybody.